either about what I said or what you experienced or anything else.
Both. I think that's what you see constantly. In a way, we have what I would call a fluctuating identity, even if sometimes we seem to have a very fixed, solid identity. I think it fluctuates all the time. And so when we are on our own, we can experience ourselves in a certain way, but that again will depend what we do. If we just sit, or if we are acting. And also, so it's interesting to notice, you know, how do I feel? How do I experience myself? And then also the question, in terms of just experiencing ourselves, by ourselves, one could say, is that, am I adding thinking to it? Am I just experiencing myself? Or am I thinking about how I should, must, could expect to experience myself? So I think what is interesting with the self-identity is how we kind of self-referencing ourselves. How we kind of adding a level of selfing that is not really necessary in terms of when we are on our own. So that's one thing. And then, of course, there is the other thing is about when we are with others. Do we define ourselves through them? Do we define ourselves through the way they define us? So then you have your own level. And, of course, after that, you can add a lot of other level about, you know, what constitutes identity. And so personally, what I think is not to fix the identity in any way, but just to become interested in how we experience it and how we built it. But yes, it's very different if we are by ourselves sometime or if we are with others. Or can we be the same when I'm by myself as I am with others? Or do they add something that we feel is missing if they're not there? Or do they add something we don't want when they're there? Because recently I was reading about something in a magazine, and there was this person saying, you know, I just like to be by myself, and everybody is worried about me being by myself, but I feel better if I am by myself than when I am with others. And other people might feel the opposite. That they feel better when they are with others than they will by themselves. Yes. You see, what I'm trying to suggest is to experience it. So what I'm trying to see is that as you sit, when you are focused on the breath and you're present to everything around you, then very likely you will feel yourself relatively stable, open, clear, let's say. So you have then, you have the feeling, I would say without naming it, you have a feeling of yourself, of your identity, so to speak, as quite spacious, open, at the same time as being stable. Then you can see your thought. You see, like, at different times, the people are different with meditation. Sometimes at the beginning, they are more settled immediately, and then toward the end, they lose a little energy. Other people at the beginning, they're a little distracted, and then toward the end, they're getting more settled. But for example, me, I was sitting, and at the beginning, I was very settled, very spacious, and it lasted quite a long time. And then, suddenly, start thinking, because I just realized it's bank holiday on Monday. And I realized that just before coming this morning. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, suddenly, husband, M&S, sweater, bank holiday. And then I can see, I can stick at different points. You know, like, husband, so I am the wife. I said I would look into sweater in Mark and Spencer. So, I mean, am I going to be a really good wife who is going to do the best she can to find the best sweater? But then it's a bank holiday. Are they going to... Or is it just, oh, yes, I have to do this. And then, you see, I can go to the bank holiday MS and the sweater and then proliferate with it. And then within that, there is different places where the identity can stick and proliferate around it. Or there is the sweater, okay, I'll take care of it, and I come back down. Oh, that, oh, yes, I can come back down. So that's what I meant. For me, it's more, in a way, trying to be, because we are doing mindfulness and awareness, it's more being in the experience. And in the experience, seeing what happens. Because I think when we do meditation, and if we have done possibly meditation for a little bit, and so we can experience what meditation sometimes helps us to be with a slightly different experience of our identity, then we can experience that and then move experientially to what happens when we move from the state of being quiet and clear, let's say, to... So it's not that you create the thought, what's my identity, is it there, there, and anywhere? Because then you would be introducing something, which would be thinking about something. Here is more in the experience. So you're sitting here, you might have a sensation. What do you do with the sensation? Do you just experience a sensation, or do you start to accumulate identity around the sensation? Do you have a feeling? So do you just have the feeling, observe it, experience it? Or do you start to stack up kind of a certain identity around it and with the thought? So that's if we want to make it really like a mindfulness exercise, awareness meditation exercise, is very much trying to see it in the experience as it happened. I am not asking you to introduce, that's why I said it's not existential or philosophical. But of course, and so if nothing is going on, then we remain with just that, the experience of the meditation, the experience of us, how we feel, when we're just aware of the breath. But generally, we don't just stay aware of the breath. We go here, go there, then it's noticing what happened there.
Danger that if we take you literally, we end up just experiencing what's happening, and we might not take any action when there's some required. I mean, could you just say how we integrate it into daily life?
Okay, sure. Let's take the experience in the supermarket. You see, the awareness is not going to stop you acting. But the awareness is helping us not to proliferate or intensify. So let's say you are in the supermarket, you are in the queue, it's not moving very fast, the person at the counter is chatting with the lady. Where I live, you know, people, it's a village and a little town, so everybody knows everybody else, so it's quite friendly and chatty at the cashier. Possibly a little, I don't know if it's the same in Cambridge, possibly different in London. So you are in the queue. You have, you know, your thing. And then you can be in, oh, this queue is not moving, this is terrible, come on, get going, you know, and, you know, it's always the same, I can never get the right queue, why can't I be more perceptive about the queue, which is the right queue? And I mean, we can really proliferate. And actually, from just being doing your shopping, you could actually be quite upset. And then, or you could say, okay, I am in the queue, it's moving slowly, and I can just be aware of standing here and moving with the queue as it moves. It doesn't mean I stay stuck to the floor, but I move with the queue, and I don't proliferate about the fact that it's slow or whatever or etc. I just am in the experience. And that's what I call creatively engaging with it without proliferating around it. So that by the time you come to the cashier, you're not in a fuming mood and cannot help yourself make a little nasty remark about spending too much time chatting and we have to get moving here, you know? And instead, you know, you can see her as a human being trying to do her job or his job and smile and move on. So I think what I'm trying to point out is that in daily life, I think it's kind of helping us to make a choice, maybe more often the choice, that we will creatively engage instead of reacting to the situation from a proliferated or intensified way of being. So that's what, it's the same with when you listen to somebody. How do we listen to that person? And we can look in the right direction and actually not listen whatsoever. And then we're a little surprised when they say, what do you think? And we have no idea what they say. Or we can be overreacting to what they say, which then intensifies the whole thing. Or we can listen to them and we think about something we rather say, which is so much more interesting. Or we can really listen, just really listen to the person in that moment. And then generally what we say is so much more creative because it comes from a very experiential right now, here with this person place. Or when we are in the office, you see, sometimes in the office, there could be some difficulty. And also sometimes you might be in the protecting mode, sometimes you might be in the kind of, I'm going to tell them like it is mode. And creative engagement for me would not be saying, oh, I must not address this, or I have to address this and show him like it is, but more, what would be the best way to engage with this situation? Can I say something now? Or is it better to wait for things to go down a bit, the heat to go down, and then say something? Or could I address this with the help of somebody else? So the idea is not to do something. But the idea is more to have enough space that you can try as best as you can creatively engage with the situation in the moment. So it's really, and also to see that sometimes we react very fast. You know, like I am helping my mother who is 87 and who is losing her memory. And so sometimes it's like, she gets anxious, she kind of, you know, keep asking the same thing exactly, you know, about the same thing, you know. And we have a week before the thing happened, and every day it's the same. And so sometimes I feel myself like, you know, can you get it? And then I think, no, she's not going to get it. She has a problem with memory. So it's kind of like, do I go into how I want her to be? Or do I accept that that's the way it is? And just find a way to actually make her more calm. Because if she is more calm, she will ask it less anyway. And answer it kindly every time so that it reassures her. But I can see that sometimes I'm kind of like, wait a minute. And so I lose it a little bit for, you know, I kind of might have a little less patience for about an hour or two. And then I come back and then I try to kind of again come from a more calm place. So it doesn't mean that we are going to float and be wise and compassionate 100% of the time. But it's more like to create the condition, to help ourselves, to develop the condition. So it's more likely that we will actually respond in a wise and compassionate way. To me, it's accessing that. Because often these, our wisdom and compassion is blocked by this habitual proliferation, identification, and things like that. So it's kind of coming back a little, and then it's kind of like, in a way, coming back a little so we can engage, possibly in a more skillful way. Anything else? Yes?
Just on the last thing you were saying, when you said our wisdom and compassion is blocked, I find I've got a very long running situation to which I know I haven't necessarily responded brilliantly, but the thing that is blocking very often has been fear. And that's, I just wanted to add that to the list of things that can really block. And maybe recognizing it is good enough, I think.
Well, you see, I think it's... As you say, there are many different things which will block wisdom and compassion. You have busyness, when suddenly we're busy, 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 and then you get a tunnel vision mind, and that's one way. You can be stressed, that's another way. And you can be afraid. You can be afraid. And so then, I think there is different things to consider. Have I good reason to be afraid? That's a first one. If I have good reason to be afraid, then how can I creatively engage with the situation, considering that? Or am I afraid, but it's more like kind of like nothing is happening, but still I have this feeling of fear because of future, of forecasting in the future, anticipation, negative anticipation often can bring fear. And so it's kind of, oh, then it's more like, is this true? Is this happening right now? So I think it depends. If it's really, you know, if we have good reason to be afraid, then it's more, okay, how can I creatively engage with that painful, stressful, fearful situation? But it's also good to see if we identify with what I would call anticipated negative scenario. But what if this happened? Or what if that happened? I mean, they've not done it now, but they might do it. What if they do it or do it in this way? And I would say, well, before anybody does something, I mean, don't forecast it. I mean, when they do it, okay, we will address it as it happens. Like with my mother, I mean, she seems to have bad memory, but it doesn't mean that she doesn't have any. And if I treat her like she always do not have any memory, it's, again, anticipating something which is not happening yet. So it's kind of like there is preparation for the future, fair enough, which can be useful up to a point, and there is negative anticipation, which I think is really a lot of the time unnecessary. And so it's kind of like seeing they're coming back from being, seeing, oh, we 10 years ahead, 5 years ahead, 2 months ahead, and coming back here, that right now, right here, I am safe. Yes. Yeah, no, I think it's very important to see that this is not about perfection, but this is really about understanding conditions, understanding what are the conditions that I'm stuck. But it doesn't mean I'm stuck all the time. But there is certain condition. I think this is what the Buddha was very much about looking at condition, inner conditions, meeting outer conditions. And so it's kind of like seeing how much do we accept certain conditions and see that there is not much we can do about those conditions. And it's more how can I manage with this condition? But is there certain conditions which actually I can change, I can transform up to a point, either internally or externally? But I think it's kind of like a dance between acceptance, this is the way it is, this is happening, and at the same time, what is it about it that possibly I could change to a certain degree which could make things easier sometime. Sometimes the thing can disappear, but not always. Because I think it's also looking at some time with the help of the meditation, the awareness, things can last less long. They can be less intense. And that, I think, is a great improvement. Instead of, often sometimes we think this is like an eradication exercise. And I would not say that at all. And so it's kind of like when I'm talking about looking at identity, I'm really looking at all the different aspects of our identity. I'm as much the wonderful aspect as the difficult aspect as the surprising aspect. Sometimes, you know, you do thing or thing happen and you kind of, oh, I never done this. This has never happened. And you think, oh, that's a new thing. You know, that's happened to me recently. That was really weird. I was traveling and I had not slept at night. We were changing airport and we could not find. We had little time and we could not find the changing place and this and that. And suddenly I was like speaking in a really weird voice to my husband. And he kind of looked at me and said, what's the matter? I've never talked like that before, ever. It was like, so, you know, and I kind of talked again. It was the same, weird. It was a very strange moment, you know. Suddenly I had this new identity. I had this new voice. Very weird. And then finally we found somebody who could indicate to us where it was, and then straight away it went. It just took, gone. And I was back to my regular identity. And then a month later, we were again in an airport. And suddenly I could see it kind of nearly rise. I thought, oh, wait a minute. Then whoops, it went down. So airport kind of create different identity.
Is it this fluid way that you've been describing? Is that there's nothing more than that? There's just this awareness of, okay, this is what happens, a thought, a sensation, a feeling, and I, you know, regularly latch onto that and it becomes a kind of solidified identity. This is what I am like. I always feel like this, or I always have this kind of thought, opinion. Is it that the actual getting away from that solidification and just observing it, is that actually it? There's no one day I'll have this. Is it the actual observation that is it the method itself that is what we're achieving? We're actually achieving it whilst we're doing it.
Partly. You see, you have what I would call a formal meditation and informal meditation. So I think when we do meditation as a formal exercise, then there we can see more this kind of, we can be this fluid, changing, creative, or we can be this fixed thing. And the main purpose of the meditation is not necessarily just to experience that. It's just today, that's a theme. I could have a theme about joy, and then we would just look at joy, or we would just look at something else. But in terms of what we're doing today, in terms of the meditation, yeah, is to see the difference. What I find is interesting is often we fix ourselves. We have an impression of, I am like this. And we associate a certain feeling with it. But it's the same with the meditation. This is what we also have to be careful. That sometimes we sit in meditation and we might feel very nicely, spacious, creative, stable, open. But then you might associate the identity of the meditation with that. So when you sit in meditation and you don't feel that, you might think, oh, I am not meditating. So identity is also how we identify things. And it's basically about how we define them. But do we define them in a functional way, or do we define them in an essential way? So, you see, then for me to say the aim is to feel all the time this spacious, creative, that would be essentially saying, you know, there is an essence and that's what you must experience. When I think the idea is more about the creative functioning, is the fact to see that sometimes it's a little more solid, sometimes it can be a little more fluid. And personally, I would say the aim, if we can talk of aim, the aim would be, in terms of what I would call daily life, the aim would be so that we have the most wisdom and compassion we can have considering the circumstances we find ourselves in. That to me would be my aim. And I see the meditation, but also the other two trainings of ethics and wisdom, as in a way, helping us to dissolve the obstacle to that. So then, I would say, in connection to your question, is that when we feel ourselves more stable, open, spacious, generally it is easier to be compassionate, wise, and creative. Because I feel we are more in the creative functioning of the organism. But there are many different conditions. And I think this is a thing, what we're doing is exploring the conditions that forms us. Inner condition meeting outer condition. And then when we are more aware of that, then there is generally less this, I should be like this, or I must not be like that. And then it's more like, in a way, what I would say, another mantra, what is the best I can do in this situation? And sometimes it's very little what you can do. And sometimes it's a lot what you can do. But it really depends. So personally, I would think more of in terms of creative functioning, so that it's more likely that there will be wisdom, there will be compassion.
So that sort of curiosity, I mean, does that come into the creative engagement? Because I wasn't really thinking about me as an identity looking at these things. It was just the things, and you know, like the red cushion, and the things that. What am I trying to say? but I found that in that curiosity, I wasn't really considering identity at all. It was completely.
This is, you see, I feel what we're trying to do, talking about identity today, I am not saying you don't have identity. I think, you know, we all exist, so we all have identity. But what is interesting is that, I would say, if I can put it in terms of percentage, we can be, I would say, for example, 95% self-centered. Or we can be 50% aware of self in the world. And I think what we're trying to do is shift the percentage, not to the 0%. So when you were in the room, it was not somebody else seeing the redness. But when you were in the room, there was no selfing, what I would call self-referencing selfing. Oh, I'm looking at the red. Oh, I like the red. It was you being in the presence of the color red, you being in the presence in the room in what I would call a 50% manner, you existing, but there was none of that stacking up, what I call stacking up of the self, which then is between me existing in this moment and the thing existing in this moment. And often we have lots of this kind of, you know, all the way of the self stacking up in between either ourself and others or ourself and things. And then often it makes it that things become bland, things become opaque. And so I think one of the things about the meditation is that suddenly you don't look at the thing for yourself. You are with the thing for itself, so to speak. And then there is more curiosity because it's less bland. It's not just all about me, which gets a little boring after a while up to a point. And it's more, I exist with this thing. And it's amazing.
It was really, really liberating because very difficult not to see everything as in terms of whether it's relevant or not to your task in hand, you know. And it's really nice just to be able to look at things completely, just look at them.
Yeah, for them.
Any agenda at all. You know.
Yeah, for themselves.
Yeah.
You see, that's why I'll talk more about this afternoon. Can we see other for themselves instead of seeing other for ourselves? Because I think it's a whole range of things disappear, which makes it much easier to creatively function, to just be in the world, and to have what... That's what the meditation I'll bring in is very much about that, kind of curiosity, nearly like astonishment. This kind of curious interest, which I would say opens everything around us. So we'll stop here now, because we thought we would have just a tinier, little bit longer break. We thought we would stop at 12:45, and then we would start again at 2:00, unless you think, you know, one hour is enough. But I think generally it's kind of good to have the time to eat slowly, to walk a little about, to digest, and then to start again. So that suits everybody, that we finish now and then we start again at 2:00. And there is some announcement about the food and things.